We bring in the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He is, in my opinion, the greatest college football coach in the history of the game. He is Nick Saban. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We really, really appreciate it. We hope you're having a wonderful morning. We want to start with the luncheon that you guys had today. We just think that's tremendous. I've been a part of the luncheon in the past. It's been many years, but I was there. You have the Nick's Kids luncheon today, and I know that's a special day for you and Miss Terry. So if you could tell our listeners exactly what that entails and what you're looking forward to about today's luncheon, that'd be fantastic.
Well, it is one of the great days of the year, at least for me. Gives us a chance to give back to the community. Nick's Kids obviously is for the benefit of helping young people have a better chance to be successful and create opportunities for the people who actually help kids who are in need. And it's an opportunity for us to thank them for doing that and support over 100 organizations in our state that have need to help kids. So this is kind of my dad's legacy. It's something that we enjoy carrying on. And Miss Terry has done a wonderful job. And I really appreciate the support our players, yourself, when you were here, as well as many others have given the kids, because that's always something special for them.
Coach Saban, we've heard you reference your dad in a lot of different instances, in different ways that he sort of helped mold you, but was giving back something that he instilled in you at an early age, and one reason that it's important for you to continue what you just stated before?
The only thing he really ever emphasized with us was have compassion for other people. I think all people. But his example was he coached and started Pop Warner football and in our area in the state of West Virginia. He did all kind of things to coach American Legion baseball, bought a bus, picked up kids to bring them to practice, to get them to participate. Was kind of a mentor to a lot of young people, you know, in our area, all sort of depended on him, came to him. So he was a father figure and set a good example for a lot of young people, and I think that's something that I've always tried to do as a coach, but we also all try to do that in the community as well.
Coach, I know you're fired up to get on the field tomorrow as well with a team that has a few less unknowns than it was a year ago. Of the things that you are trying to figure out, what would you say is the highest priority for you as a staff, you and the staff, when trying to identify, you know, who you're probably going to lean on early in the season and some of the guys that might need to emerge and be brought on a little quicker than some of the others?
Well, I think from a big picture standpoint, it's more, are people ready for the challenge of the season? I think sometimes players don't realize that everyone else is starting practice this week too, and they're all getting ready to try to beat us. And we have to be ready for that challenge. So to have the right leadership on your team, to have the right competitive character, all those things are really important to developing into the kind of team that you're capable of being, by individuals reaching their full potential, by the togetherness and team chemistry that you're able to establish. So I think from a big picture standpoint, those things are really, really important. I think maybe people don't realize that even when we did summer scouting reports this year on other teams, much more difficult to figure out how all the changes on a roster is going to really impact the success of a team. You have teams in our league that have 10 to 15 new players, not recruits, not people that you recruited and know what kind of players they are, but people that came from other conferences and other parts of the country that you really don't know a whole lot about. We have five guys on our team that all could make a significant impact. Those that have been here have made an impact in a positive way. So how that's going to impact our team and other teams is really probably a question mark that I'm sure a lot of coaches are wondering about. And I'm excited about the guys that we have that are new to our program, new to our team. And I'm excited about the young players that we had to develop and which one of those guys will actually be able to contribute. You know, we've had a lot of freshmen play here and contribute to the success of the team, and our upperclassmen really embrace these guys in a positive way, and I think that's a good thing for our program. So, you know, hopefully we'll have some of those guys emerge. But last year we had kind of a rebuilding year, so we should have 9 starters back on offense, 9 on defense, but 6 guys go out early for the draft, so now we have 5 back on offense and 7 back on defense. So that in and of itself creates a few more question marks, but it also creates opportunity for other players to be able to shine in the program and contribute in a positive way. So nobody knows for sure how all this stuff's going to sort of come to fruition, but that's the part of the excitement and challenge that we have to try to develop a team.
Coach Saban, one thing I love discussing with you are sort of specific instances or different things that you have to accomplish on the field across the course of a year. With the addition of Jahmyr Gibbs, Greg and I have talked about how we could envision some more 2-back sets that your offense may run with what he's able to do out of the backfield. You also have you're very deep at running back with guys that have played and contributed. But when you watch that from the other side of the ball, can you sort of take us through the difficulties of defending an offense that runs a lot of 2 running back sets? Obviously, you saw it a lot back in the day when we would get sort of the pro sets with a lot of fullbacks, but now a lot of teams are running 2 running backs, which one essentially could be a hybrid receiver and be very difficult to identify as far as what he is inside your personnel. Can you just describe to us how you would coach your guys with what you'll see in today's offenses with 2 running backs on the field?
Well, I think you make a good point that is something that is becoming more and more pervasive in presentation to what people are doing on offense. But I also think you make a good point. How you defend it depends on the diversity of the players that are actually making those 2-back sets. But I also think one of the things that people are doing more of with 2-back sets is using the Y as an off player. So they're actually creating what I refer to as 3-back runs. So you have 3 people in the backfield because the Y, although he's not probably going to carry the ball, he is a slider blocker, an insert blocker. So the keys become different. The formations are a little different. But it's just a part of what we have to do now in terms of being able to defend those formations. But most people who do it, they still maintain spread-type elements in what they do, whether they still throw RPOs or boots, and just an opportunity to get maybe a more skilled guy the ball, because the predominant formation in college football is 3 wide receivers, a tight end, and a back. Well, when you replace that tight end with a very skilled guy as a running back, you can do some of the same things, but you create a little better mismatch in some cases, depending on what kind of tight ends a team has, in terms of what you have to defend.
Coach, it's rare, it feels like, or maybe not that rare, but for a while there it felt a little bit strange that you have an offensive coordinator coming back. Bill O'Brien is back for year number 2. I know that that's something that you're excited about with what he was able to accomplish with Bryce in that offense last year, but where have you seen the offense evolve this year, knowing the pieces that you have and the pieces that you're likely going to have to rely on in order to recreate the magic that we saw from the offense at times last year?
Well, I think we need to improve how we control the line of scrimmage. So it starts up front, I think, always on offense. So, and I'm pleased with the addition of a couple coaches, tight end coach, offensive line coach, that we've been able to add, that their new energy, enthusiasm, and ideas may enhance that development to some degree. I always have questions because we've had such great wide receivers here over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. I don't know, 4 first-round draft picks and a second-round draft pick. So we've got a couple young guys, a couple new guys that are transfers that be interesting to see how the dynamics of the passing game sort of comes together. But I do think one thing that is a really, really positive thing is the continuity of the coaches coming back and how the system can evolve with a better understanding of how to implement things is really, really a positive for the players, and what we can accomplish and achieve on offense. So we're really pleased to have the coaches that we have. We're pleased to have Bill back again. It's always a little bit of a transition when you come from the NFL to college, but he's made that very well, and I think this year will even be better in terms of how he can implement the things that we do as a total offense, and the players, and utilization of the players with a better understanding of who we have.
Coach Saban, it's interesting with you guys set to begin practice tomorrow. We were talking with Greg a little earlier in the week about some different things, and he said, you know, we weren't allowed to have a bad practice. That wasn't really allowed. And I said, well, so you never had a bad practice? And he's like, no, we weren't allowed to. I wasn't allowed to have a bad practice. So can you clarify for us whether or not Greg McElroy ever had a bad practice at Alabama?
I think if you go back to standard of what a good and bad practice is and what the capabilities of a guy are potentially, I would agree with him that he never really had a bad practice. But, again, I don't know how high the bar of expectation was really ever set either. But, no, I think that Greg is exactly right because he understands the concept that tell players all the time, you're either going to get better or you're going to get worse in every practice and every opportunity that you have. So you want to create the right habits. So if you don't have the right mindset to do things the right way in practice, then you're not going to improve. And why are you practicing if not to improve? And players sometimes think you practice something until you get it right. So once they get it right one time, they think, oh, I got this now. I don't need to focus. But the fact of the matter is you really want to practice things until you can't get it wrong, because then it becomes a habit. Then you get in the game. In the heat of the battle, because it is a habit, that's how you're going to execute, and that's what you're going to do. So I think it's important the players to understand that. And practice is important to contributing to that.
Cole basically has no understanding of that, Coach. He said there are some days he just mailed it in. That's why I had to push back and said it was never allowed at our place. That's why we won. So it's just, you know, that's the difference between what we've built, Coach, and what Cole experienced in his college experience. That's as simple as that.
Tell Coach Saban I played for Rick Trickett and ask him if he thinks I mailed one in. Ever.
I could tell you some of those stories, but probably not on the radio.
Yeah. We'll save those for off the air, Coach. Some specific position battles. Obviously, you're very close to the defensive backs. That's your bread and butter. That's your expertise. Not that you're, you know, any less of an expert at any other position, but I know that that's what you're most passionate about is that specific position. As you try to figure out what the pecking order is going to be at corner, what do you want to see from those guys as they're going throughout the fall camp?
I think there's a couple things that's really important to play and be a good defensive back is you got to be a good tackler. You got to be able to play man-to-man. You got to be able to play the ball in the deep part of the field. Otherwise, you're going to give up big plays. So we do have competition at a lot of positions in the secondary, especially at corner, which I like. I think that's good. It helps players develop. It helps players be challenged to get better every day. And I can't tell you who's going to come out on top. I think we have three or four guys battling. So be interesting, but hopefully they'll all work hard and improve. And if they do that, they'll all have an opportunity to play at some point.
Coach Saban, we appreciate the time this morning. Know you're about to get into the grind. So best of luck. Wish you the best, and look forward to catching up with you this season.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Nick Saban, Alabama head football coach there, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.